of cream, red roses too.
This is Ed Cohen, editor of Global Business News, and your host on Global Radio Talk Show, coming to you today from Westport, Connecticut, as well as San Diego, California. Our very special guest today is Jim Simon. Mr. E.J. Simon was CEO of GMAC Global Relocation Services and the managing director of Douglas Elliman, the largest real estate company in New York. He's been a consultant to many leading private equity firms and has held several senior-level positions at prominent financial services companies as well. He loves to travel. He's a food enthusiast, and he's written two books. So we're going to talk to Jim about his books and about himself and about turning around companies and what's involved. Let's welcome Jim.
Hi, Ed. How are you? Very good to be here.
That's great. I'm really honored to have you. So what's a turnaround?
Turnaround for a company is basically once you realize that the organization is failing and it's beginning to go down a spiral, you have a couple of options, and they're pretty simple. One is to follow that spiral down. The other is to arrest the descent and take very swift and definitive action to turn the organization around and get those arrows pointing back up.
Before we get into this, tell us a little bit about your most recent book and your first book, Death Never Sleeps. So what was the most recent book?
The most recent was Death Logs In, which just came out in November of 2014. The first book was Death Never Sleeps. One's a sequel to the other, although they're both freestanding. And basically, it's commercial fiction. And it's about a man who duplicated himself on a computer after a breakthrough in artificial intelligence just before he was murdered. This really is more about someone who comes back to life. So it's actually a techno-thriller. It's been described as a technological and psychological suspense wrapped inside a traditional crime thriller. So there are really two stories going on. One is really about this individual who was an underworld figure and had invested millions through some computer geeks in Silicon Valley in artificial intelligence. They made a breakthrough. He was able to duplicate himself literally on a computer just before he was murdered. And what happens is he comes back to life. His brother is told about this secret computer that exists with his dead brother on it. And he finds it. He breaks the code, reunites with his brother. And then it becomes, there are two pieces to it. One is the interaction between the deceased brother, who is now in cyberspace, but back. And the second part of it is the two brothers fighting off the murderers, the bad guys.
Wow. Well, it sounds like this is a love, but let's talk about work for a minute. So your specialty now is turning around and advising companies. Just to quickly review, especially in today's improving, quote unquote, improving economic environment, many organizations are still failing to meet their goals, and some are even in danger of bankruptcy. So what are the signs that a company is in trouble?
Well, the most obvious sign clearly are the financial results. So once an organization is consistently and significantly missing its targets, it's evident to everyone that there's a problem. That's really the tip of the iceberg. Under the water, are usually a lot of other symptoms that you probably see before the numbers make it evident. And those are things like poor employee morale, when price is your primary differentiator, declining customer service, the loss of some long-established relationships. Those are usually the signs that tell you you're going to start missing those financial targets, and then the numbers are usually often trailing, but that's the verification. I think there's one other sign, which is usually when a company stops supplying free coffee to their employees, it's one of the first early signs.
I got it. Okay, so you've been a CEO and you've been an advisor in private equity, so you have some nice perspective here for our listeners who are, according to Google Analytics, in over 200 countries, about half are corporate and the other half sell to corporate. So how should CEOs and boards approach a failing company?
Well, it all starts with leadership. You really have two things going on. You have the financial engineering, which we'll put that over to the side, that has to go on to ensure the company has the financial wherewithal to continue for whatever period of time to ride itself through the turnaround strategy. Then you get to the actions that have to take place in the company to arrest what's the failure. And the first thing you have to look at is the leadership. And you start, of course, with the CEO and the management team. And the fundamental question a board and senior leadership has to ask is, the people running the company, are they the ones that got you there? And if they're the ones that got you into this situation, are they really capable of getting you out of it? So it really starts with leadership, because before you're going to drive any strategy through a company to turn it around, you need to be sure that you have the people in place that can execute that turnaround strategy.
But it's all about customers, right? If you have good customers and you have an ability to service customers, you usually do okay in business. So how about communications? How about engagement with employees? These are really incredibly important, aren't they?
Absolutely. And it's very easy to be a great communicator, and especially with your own employees and with your clients when things are going well. A lot of the difficulties and the real proof of how good your communication skills are is really tested when things aren't going well. So when you have to start trimming the fat, or you have to start making cuts, or you have to start cutting back in certain areas, and when the financials don't allow you to do a lot of fun things out there and invest in perhaps some categories that are discretionary, that's the real test of how good your communication is. And I'm not suggesting that when a company is in trouble, it needs to broadcast that to the whole world. Obviously, there are stages of communication and different levels that you go through as you go through difficult times. But fundamentally, you want to create an organization where your employees trust the leadership and where your customers and clients trust the organization. Because if you're going to go through a difficult period and you're going to execute a turnaround strategy, which often involves some very difficult actions, you want to have your employees behind you and you want to have your clients behind you. And the better informed they are, the more trusting they're going to be. And the last thing anyone wants is a surprise. And that's the quickest way to lose the trust of your people and your clients.
So can't do it alone is what you're saying. CEO has to find allies somewhere, right?
Absolutely. And your allies really are, well, they're your creditors, they're your employees, and they're your customers. Those are three major constituencies.
What do you think of the economy now? And can you cite a few examples of companies that are doing better now, they're ahead of the curve or riding the curve right now? Or if you want, can you describe a couple of situations that you think are problematic?
That's a good question, Ed. Well, first of all, regarding the economy, I think the U.S. economy is clearly rebounding. I mean, unemployment is down, interest rates are down, the price of fuel is down. We're the leading producer of oil. There are a lot of very great things happening in this economy. The challenge and the threat really currently comes from overseas. We've got Europe, which is really stuck in its tracks. We've got issues in Asia. So the world economy poses our biggest threat.
There's a lot of realtors out there, and there's not a lot of sales going on. We hear about the big trophy sales,
Yeah. But
a lot of people can't get qualified, never mind where they're going to go, because there's just not a lot for sale, because people are either underwater still or just sticking their nose above the water level and things are looking up. And where would they go? Because they don't have the equity put down. So I would say the real estate industry is in a problematic way. What do you think? Am I wrong?
I think real estate is a challenge today for the first primary reason is it is very difficult to get a mortgage. even the most qualified people are having problems. Ben Bernanke, the former head of the Fed, had difficulty just recently. I think that in reaction to what happened over the last few years with the meltdown, the banks and other lending institutions have really tightened up on lending, and mortgages were a prime culprit of our past problems. And I think it is very difficult for someone today, even with very good credit, to get a mortgage. So it starts right there. Then you have other issues in terms of people having the equity to do it. Do they feel confident about their employment? And I think these things are coming back, but I do think we do have a mortgage qualification issue that still has to be addressed so that people have an ease in getting the financing they need. But I do think in terms of overall, I think the markets are slowly but steadily improving.
So the stability in the markets, not only for real estate, but for other companies, but real estate and home ownership, whether it's a condo or a single family home, this is really the bedrock of the American society. It drives so many other industries that without fixing it, we're not going to go anywhere as a society, because the American dream is owning a home and being able to pay it off is even better. But how do people do it if they're unsure of their job? And it just seems like a mess. So as a turnaround specialist, as a thinker about turning around companies, all these things enter into the mix now. Or am I wrong at this?
No, I think you're correct, except I think if you were to look at the big indicators, you know, recognizing that it was just several years ago when we were on the verge of an economic meltdown, and yet today, you know, unemployment just went under 6%. The real estate markets have been slow to recover, but they are steadily recovering. But I don't think you go through what we went through, and also which was partly a result of excess even in the real estate markets. I mean, people were speculating in many areas. We were overbuilt, and we had, as a result, you know, a severe correction. And as part of that, I think, you know, when you go through that type of difficulty, I don't think those problems weren't created overnight. They built up over several years, and it has taken several years for us to start coming out of it. As uncomfortable as it may be for many people in the business, I think the fact that we are slowly but steadily coming back may be much better than an overexuberance in terms of the markets. So there is an advantage to a steadier rebound than getting these markets overheated again, and which does lead to speculation and does lead to, you know, price spiraling.
So let's turn the telescope around a little bit. You've been through some turnarounds personally. Douglas Elliman in New York, which is the largest real estate firm in New York, I guess it still is.
Yep.
And in putting together the Brookfield Global Services, which has developed into the largest or maybe the second largest relocation company. So please address Douglas Elliman and Brookfield.
Well, Brookfield, which when I was there was GMAC, Global Relocation, that was a matter of really taking five, six acquisitions that had been made before I got there. The company had no identity. We had different fiefdoms, which were the organizations that GMAC had purchased. So that was really a matter of making sense of a lot of different acquisitions that were made very quickly and needed to be rationalized. And those acquisitions were also made during a time when the economy was very hot. And I think people made a lot of projections back then in terms of significant growth happening at a certain pace, which didn't happen. So once you have a combination of a lot of acquisitions at once that need to be put together, and then you have growth not meeting expectations, you've got a difficult situation. So that was really a matter of putting a new organization together, both from operationally, financially and from a marketing standpoint, which was a challenge for a number of years. And in the relocation industry, you have a lot of challenging technology issues. And when each organization has its own technology, we know that that is not easy. So in terms of Brookfield, it was very different from Douglas Elliman. Douglas Elliman, when I was hired, had just lost its entire senior management team, including my predecessor who headed up the firm. In addition, actually, it was under siege by Leona Helmsley, who owned its chief competitor. And Helmsley had gone out, hired the whole management team virtually from Douglas Elliman, hired it away, including some of the middle management of various offices, and then proceeded to pick apart the agent base and really raided many of the highest producers in Elliman. So when I walked into that company, not only was there was much of the senior management was gone, a decent amount of the middle management was gone, and also the agent base had been severely impacted, which also meant that not only did we have all these issues, but our revenue was falling off the side. So it was a matter of coming in, analyzing the problem, which didn't take too long, stopping the bleeding, stabilizing the company, and then rebuilding it.
Well, I want to circle back to that in just a minute, but in looking at your career path here and your history, you were involved to some extent in financial work, involved with purchasing or managing and selling portfolios of foreclosed residential assets.
Yes.
Are you still doing that?
No, I'm not doing it now. There was a very good window of time when the banks and the brokerage institutions owned portfolios, very large portfolios of foreclosed properties, non-performing assets. So our strategy was very simply to go in, price them very aggressively, and nationally buy a national portfolio and develop a national portfolio of homes. And then we would literally take them in, reasonably fix up the property so they were in marketable condition, and then market them through a broker network around the country. So it's a pretty simple strategy. You know, you buy low, you fix the properties up, and you sell higher.
Yeah,
doing that
please.
At that time still had significant risk.
Now,
because we didn't know how low the economy was going to go.
That's no longer critical, though.
There is still a decent inventory in many institutions of foreclosed properties, but that is certainly being sold off pretty steadily now.
So the people who are buying these properties are people who somehow can get financing.
Yes, absolutely. Listen, the financing is there. It's just difficult, and I do think that the paperwork and regulations around it now can be pretty cumbersome for people.
Right. Okay, so when do you think, or what will happen to make that happen easier? What needs to happen?
Well, I think we've come off a period beginning in 08 where the economy tanked and where we had huge, obviously, disruption in the real estate markets and historic records of foreclosures. And then as we analyzed that, we saw all the excesses that had been building up in the years prior to 08. I think we put restrictions in place and controls to basically deal with what had happened, and inevitably pendulums swing to extremes and then level off. And I think what you'll find, my prediction would be, that the financial institutions, helped perhaps by the government, will ease back on some of the burdensome restrictions and that we've put on borrowers right now, and will make it a little easier to apply and secure a mortgage.
So it really doesn't matter if it's Republican or Democrat in the White House. It's becoming a national necessity, apparently.
I don't think it's as partisan. I don't think it's a real partisan issue. I think the country as a whole reacted together to try and be sure we didn't go down the same path that led up to 08. And I think people will feel, just like in any other crisis, once it's over, everyone takes a deep breath. And I think the pendulum will swing not to where it had been in pre-08 years, but to a more reasonable level.
So what is the prognosis, if you will, look in your crystal ball and look at the world, say, a year from now, okay? It looks like the U.S. economy is going to, just for the time being anyway, get stronger. And even with the low price of oil, relatively speaking, is actually a terrific thing for the American economy.
Yep.
And the American people. There are companies who are going to get hurt. It's probably going to cause some mergers and acquisitions or worse. And there could be exacerbations geopolitically outside of the U.S. And that could come back in and suck us into something bad. That, of course, that's just me talking about it. What do you think?
I think the U.S. economy will be very strong. I think we are clearly on an upswing now. I think the challenges will be, as I indicated, will come from the declining economies that purchase our goods in Europe and Asia. And, of course, I think there is always the threat of a significant terror event, which could send ripples through not only society but our economies. So as I look at it, I think our U.S. economy is in very good shape. That doesn't mean people are feeling good, but certainly it means we are on an upswing and we are getting healthier and healthier. At the same time, however, the world economy and many of the economies that purchase our goods are in many cases level at best and in some cases declining. That will be a drag on our own economy. And there is, you know, the global terror threat is just a destabilizing factor.
Right. I want to now focus, as we come to a close here, on this to circle back to the turnaround aspect, because this is your new love and what you're focusing in on. And what we've just learned is deep experience in taking care of companies and situations known as a turnaround situation. In other words, take a bad situation and try to make it better by using common sense as well as the resources and contacts that you have had. So you're looking to do that again, is that right?
Yes. I'm doing it as a consultant to private equity firms right now, and I am consulting with a number of firms that have engaged me privately to look at their business and their organization.
Jim, it's been a delight speaking with you and Jim Simon, we've been speaking with. And Jim, tell people how to get in touch with you. Is there a website?
Sure. It's www.ejsimon.com. And my email address is ejsimon@ejsimon.com. And I'm on Facebook. My author Facebook page is EJ Simon Author. But my website is ejsimon.com.
And this is Global Radio Talk Show, and your host today is me, Ed Cohen, and I'm signing off now, and thank you, Jim Simon, for being our special guest executive interview.
It was my pleasure. Thanks, Ed.
Signing off now, and let's listen to Louis Armstrong.
Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful